White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 439.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with WarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. Oh dear, we've gone horribly off the rails.
Keep going. Sorry.
I may leave this in. It's entertaining. I thought you were going at our...
Nope. I was trying very hard not to cough while you're doing the intro.
Oh, no. Our Patreon.com family. Have you heard of them, John? You know about these fine people. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and as you've heard, I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm coughing John Ritter.
Are you feeling better? You got something to drink there?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, hey, it's out of our usual. We've done 230 something episodes of this fine program and never done that. So that was interesting. I might just leave it. So, well, here we are, right? It's as of this recording, it's the evening of December the 16th, and my family and I are snowed in. We are under about a foot of snow here. I'm going to have to go dig our cars out. I mean, you know, our cars are in the garage, thank goodness. Living in the Midwest, I've come to appreciate the garage as a concept, you know. But Maddie's car is in the driveway, so you can't even see it. And the snowplow came through and piled up a pressure ridge in the Arctic across the front of our driveway. So we got a lot of shoveling to do tomorrow. How are you doing, sir?
Better than that. Mm-hmm. Doing okay. So doing fine. It, you know, don't have a foot of snow here, but I'm sure winter is coming for us, and trying to enjoy the off season and then some weekends without, you know, filled with college football.
It's hard to imagine weekends without college football, but yet here we are.
It's true.
One of the last times I remember it being like this was the day before Auburn played Florida State in the Rose Bowl in the national championship game. That was, I remember I was out shoveling, and I'm like, you know, I just know I'm going to have a heart attack and die the day before Auburn wins the national championship. That would be so me right there. But fortunately, I did survive to watch us lose. So, yeah, that's how my off season's going, is I'm going to be shoveling snow. I did a brief show this afternoon on video, trying to do the White Rocket thing to see if people would want to watch a pop culture thing. And, you know, it was the middle of a work day. It's funny. Right before I went on, my wife says, you know, it is Monday. And I'm like, oh, it is? I didn't think about that. So everybody's at work. But it didn't have a huge audience. But we'll see how I'll put it out on the podcast talking about TV shows. So I guess, you know, we did a video show yesterday where we talked a little bit about everything for about a half an hour. Some of that will come up again, although I did post it. I went ahead and posted. You know what we've been doing? I've been posting them later when I record the audio from the video shows. But I figure I'll go ahead and put it up now, right after the video show. And that way people will have heard it and it'll be out of the way when our new Monday night show Tuesday morning goes up. So I thought that was probably a better idea than just kind of leaving it on the shelf for days and days. So we'll see. But what kind of Auburn news we have going on? We got to talk about, I guess, a little bit about Chad Morris since our last show, right?
I do.
So what do you think about that?
Well, when we last spoke,
yes,
we were without an offensive coordinator. Kenny Dillingham had left for Florida State, and we reviewed the potential candidates. So we talked about Chad Morris as a candidate, but now he's the guy. And I think, you know, reading about it, thinking about it, sleeping on it for a few days, I think the answer is that Auburn fans should be very, very happy with this hire.
Yeah.
That, again, if it was another school and they said, we're hiring Chad Morris as the offensive coordinator, it would be, wow, that's huge. You know, this is a guy who was the Clemson OC and was great at that job and was so good at that job that he got two head coaching jobs out of it.
That's right.
So, you know, one of the better offensive minds in college football. So I, you know, I think it's a really positive thing for Auburn. Because here's the other part. We know the history of Gus with offensive coordinators, right?
Right.
And so it's either, you know, somebody that he doesn't see as an equal and then therefore doesn't, you know, listen to and include their concepts and feedback and that kind of stuff.
And doesn't have a pre-existing relationship with, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somebody, you know, or he, you know, he does, but then he can't stay out of it and he meddles and calls plays and that kind of stuff. And that person gets frustrated. So.
Yeah.
But this is something we haven't had before. Mm-hmm. This is something where the offensive coordinator that he hired is someone much more that Gus considers an equal.
Yeah.
Which I would tell you that he, you know, I mean, that this is not an insulting thing, but I don't think he thinks about, you know, Rhett Lashley or Kenny Dillingham or even Chip Lindsey that way.
No.
So I think the Chad Morris-Gus relationship can be much more of a collaborative one, a true kind of sharing, melding of the minds thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not hung up about, you know, who's going to call the plays or that kind of stuff. But I do think that Chad, you know, truly understands what Gus is trying to do on offense and can help teach it, implement it, recruit to it, but also has a different flavor, has been some different places and seen some different things and can bring some different elements to kind of spice up the current version of the Gus offense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's somebody he respects and will listen to who we don't, I mean, they're still going to work out that relationship. We don't know who's going to be calling the plays exactly. Gus has kind of said, he's been unclear about it. The fact that he's actually been somewhat open to at least discussing it is more than I expected. You know, I thought he was like, I'm going to be calling plays forever and ever. Amen. So, yeah.
And I suspect that he will. I think like the idea that for him that he goes into a game week and he's not going to call the plays is going to be a problem for him. But I also think like it's one of those things like if you had a Ferrari, would you let other people drive it or would only you get to drive it? Yeah. But I think he trusts Chad Morris to the level where he would let him drive it some. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because he thinks of him as a professional driver who knows what he's doing behind the wheel.
And also who understands how the car is supposed to be driven.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The intent of the driver.
Right.
So I think it's big. I think Chad Morris will, you know, everybody's always like, oh, we got to bring in different passing concepts. And I think Chad Morris can do some of that. I mean, I think he has used different things in his passing games at Clemson and SMU. And I think he could bring some of those to Auburn and incorporate them in the passing game. I think he can help with that part. I think he, you know, he has a really good reputation as an evaluator of quarterback talent,
which we could use.
And we've talked about that a few times in this podcast.
Yes,
about the history of that in Auburn football, and I think he is somebody that, you know, could plug that gap and can really be that person who can evaluate quarterbacks and decide who we should recruit and who we should sign and then develop them when they get there. I think that's a huge, you know, void that he can fill and not just fill, but fill well.
Yeah. Am I wrong to think of this as potentially another Will Muschamp situation, though? I mean, although Muschamp left Florida with still a fairly good head coach reputation, he hadn't done that much damage to it at Florida. Whereas Chad Morris left Arkansas with people saying this is the worst, you know, guy ever. Now, you and I have talked already about the fact that that was kind of unfair, the situation he inherited and the type of players he had. And it just really, again, that was like putting a Ferrari driver, you know, in charge of a Mack truck. And he's out there trying to get that Mack truck to do Ferrari stuff, and it's going to go 0-12 or whatever, 2-10 or 3-9. Yeah, but
he really didn't show any progress at all, right? I mean, I think that was a complete failure that way. So I don't care about the Arkansas stuff in terms of his tenure at Auburn. Like, I don't think that reflects on
him. No. But I'm saying, is this going to be a deal where he's going to be offensive coordinator for 1 year and then go off to be, you know, head coach at, you know, a Division I AA type team or, you know, Arkansas State?
He could go to let me say this. If he gets a job after next year, it'll be because our offense was awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
And if that happens, well, yeah.
Yeah, Muschamp didn't get the South Carolina job because of the 2015 Auburn team.
No.
Muschamp got it because he was Muschamp and he hadn't done that horribly at Florida, just not as good enough. Right. So it's in some ways it's a similar situation, but I think in other ways it's very different. That's
yeah,
what I'm
no,
getting
I think
at.
I think it's a good parallel, but you're right that Chad Morris's reputation is hurt much more than Muschamp's was. Muschamp had won some games at Florida, even if they were ugly, painful games.
Yeah, he was still a brand that South Carolina would look at and go, ooh, if we could get him, I don't care what he did at Florida. Whereas South Carolina, for example, is not going to look at him after 1 year as the offense coordinator for Bo Nix and go, yeah, we got to have him as our head coach. That's just not going to happen.
No, at any school, the first thing the fans are going to say is, you know, look at Arkansas. Look at what happened. Why would you hire him? So I think you're right. I think that creates a scenario where his market value as a head coach is low, and that's good for us because it means he's going to stay. I think he'll stay around a couple years.
So what about his son? We know anything? I mean, we talked a little bit about how, you know, he's realizing that he doesn't just need to go where his dad is because his dad may not be there forever, and you kind of have to pick your own path, you know. Has there been
right. So he was committed to his dad at Arkansas and decommitted when his dad got fired. His son is a real quarterback recruit, you know, highly recruited, recruited by a bunch of schools, Oklahoma,
four-star,
Southern Cal, lots of other places. So he, you know, he's not somebody that we would take like just because his dad was a coach. He's a legitimate recruit that a lot of schools want to play quarterback. But I think he's worried about if he signs with Auburn and then his dad leaves or whatever. Like the scenario at Arkansas, I think, has made him think he should do what's best for him. Now, he may consider Auburn anyhow because clearly we need quarterbacks and he probably would like to go where his dad is. And this is a, you know, an offense that's shown that, you know, it could, dual threat quarterback can have success. So, I think he's been playing in this kind of offense in Texas and I think it could work. We're trying to get other quarterbacks, including him. So I think there's a chance. I don't think it's a lock in any certain direction there.
Right.
But again, it's Monday night. Signing day is Wednesday. Early signing period day.
Man, yeah.
Begins Wednesday.
It's not long.
No, it's not far away.
Derrick Brown didn't win. He won award. He got an award today or yesterday, right? But it wasn't one of the big ones. And he just happened to play in a year where you had the young guy, Ohio State, which is unfortunate. But he did get like All-American, right? Census All-American.
Yeah, he was AP All-American and all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. That's good. And he said he's going to play in the bowl game.
He did.
I had a note, by the way. He's going to play in the board game. And I'm like, which board game? is he playing Monopoly? Or
You know what? When it's Derrick Brown, it's Risk.
It is, yes. It is Risk when you play Derrick Brown. That's a very good point, John. That's excellent. That's well done. So he's going to play, and that's awesome. We talked a little bit about this on the video show. Do we know anything yet about Marlon Davidson? Is he going to play?
The word is everybody's going to play now.
All right.
So Marlon Davis is going to play. The other seniors on defense are going to play. Prince Tague is going to play. So I don't know if it was a thing where – once Derrick Brown decided, everybody else was like, all right, that's it, I'm in.
Yeah.
Or they were already in and he was the only one that was wavering. But he is 100% going to play. And actually, I think one of Minnesota's players is not going to play.
Oh, okay. I like it.
So, yeah. So it's a huge thing. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but that, you know, if Derrick Brown decided not to play, we shouldn't, you know, we change how we feel about him or hold him against him or anything. I mean, he has to do what's best for him and his family. And if he gets injured in this game, we're going to feel really bad.
That's true.
So I think we have to just, you know, have a force field of positive thoughts around Derrick Brown until this game is over.
He should play in bubble wrap.
That's it. But that's not how he plays. He's not going to play halfway.
How you get hurt, honestly, is when you play.
That's right.
Scared.
When you ease up and you're trying to protect yourself, that's when you get hurt. He needs to go full speed like he always does, and that'll be the thing. So,
I haven't heard. I did see Gus's press conference yesterday, but I haven't heard, at least when before he left Auburn. Apparently, they're on the way down there now. It seems like I saw that he had a press conference, and it did not look like he was at Auburn.
He had a press conference. They had the coaches down there for like a.
Oh,
press okay. conference.
All right. That's what I must have seen.
He talked about they had, you know, the first couple practices, and they were all the young guys practicing. So that was, nothing big exciting in that, other than the, the normal bowl practice week, as they do the young guys at first. And the good stuff about Brodarius Ham, people were talking about that. The other news that really came out of it was that they, Gus said that both Austin Troxell and Mark Anthony Richards should be ready to go for spring practice.
That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing just our gigantic stable of running backs next year. We talked about that again, too, yesterday, that you got everything from the, the guys that are leading the way this year, like Booby and DJ, to Joyner that played a little bit, to Mark Anthony coming in, Shivers, and then Tank,
Tank Bigsby.
I mean, we just got so many running backs, and there's only one ball, and there's a lot of that's going to be thrown by Bo Nix. So there's a lot of competition going to be happening in that running back room, and honestly, I'm not convinced that their position coach couldn't go out there and get 1,000 yards too, So I wouldn't put anything back past old Cadillac. So. It's going to be interesting to see what the offense looks like next year. If we can just cobble together an offensive line, you've got a much more seasoned and experienced Bo Nix. You're going to have 8,000 good running backs back there, including finally some power backs maybe back there. The receivers are mostly coming back except for a couple. Got a whole bunch of rookie, receivers. The receivers coming back except for a couple. Got a whole stable of 4-star receivers coming in. The offense just looks like it could be very, very formidable next year.
It does. And I think, again, Bo Nix with a season under his belt and now a bunch more time in the offseason with these receivers. Because remember, he didn't get offseason with Schwartz and Seth Williams because everybody was hurt or doing other sports and stuff. So I think it's going to make a big difference. And a year, coming into next fall, I think they'll be in a, levels and levels higher than they were this year.
And when we get down to Tampa, I'm hoping we're going to see, in the immortal words of Bill Murray, some great green gobs of greasy grime at gopher guts. They asked Gus about that, and he said, we think about using some plastic explosives in the holes. We think about pumping some water in there, get in there, pump water, drive them out. Got some plastic explosives shaped like little animals we're going to put in there. It'd be special. So whatever works to kill all the gophers on the course, I'm in favor of. We don't even need a reason. We don't even need a reason.
We don't. So Minnesota's pretty good. We'll talk a little bit more about them as we get closer, but I just they're a good team. They went 10-2. They lost to Wisconsin. They lost to Iowa.
Yeah, they beat they beat Penn State, but lost to Iowa.
Yep. But they have 2 1,000-yard receivers, 1,000-yard rusher. They have a good quarterback named Tanner Morgan.
Gotta watch some film.
Yeah, no, they're pretty good. He's a good quarterback, and the receivers are the ones that really stand out to me. That if you watch the highlights from the Penn State game, I think you'll see kind of what they can do. They have a guy receiver named Bateman who I think is really, really good on defense. I mean, their offensive line is the heaviest in college football.
Wow,
on an average pounds per man guy, they have I don't think their left tackle is like really, really giant, but they have a bunch of big guys. But it's a big, I think it's kind of a Big Ten offensive line.
Right. Those have given us problems in the past, though.
They have. Defensively, they're pretty good. They got some good guys in the secondary, some good cover guys. And so I think that's going to be a challenge for our receivers. So it's going to be tough. It's a good game. Do not expect a Purdue kind of roll out of bed, beat them by 30 kind of game.
Right.
And I think they're going to be highly motivated to play.
Yeah, I think it's more than we are, unless we really – with our leadership, the senior leadership, some of the players we have, like Derek, it's possible that our guys can get up for it and really – but it's kind of an abstract thing to be playing for 10 wins and to send your seniors out with a win. That was our kind of similar to our motivation in 2014, and we went and lost to, I think, Wisconsin again, right? So I worry about this bowl game. I can't take for granted anything about it, because I just feel like you say, I feel like Minnesota's going to come down there, chip on their shoulder, looking to prove something in the warm weather, and I feel like we're going to be down there on vacation, and we'll be talking about getting 10 wins and sending the seniors out in style, and then you actually get out there in the game and I don't know. I just have a bad feeling about it. I'd love to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I just have a bad feeling about it. So, so you say that signing day is coming up in a couple of days. So we're getting, I think, 20 this time. This go around.
Again, it's different than the old days where the February signing day was it, and then the early signing day was just kind of stick your toe in the water. Now the early signing day is it, and the big signing day in February, the old signing day is just kind of the cleanup.
Yeah.
So you could sign up to 20. Auburn could sign up to 25. Right now we have 20 commits. Maybe we'll get one or two more before Wednesday. But if we signed those 20 and went into February, need a few more, that would be bad. We're currently ranked 10th in the country and 6th in the SEC.
That's insane, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so crazy that you can be doing so. I mean, this is what I always say. There's 100 and something teams, and we're what, 10th, you say? And yet in our own division,
10th
we're probably
in the nation
fourth.
And 6th in the country.
That's ridiculous.
Or 10th in the nation is 6th in the SEC. And so that's like on the total points level, which is like teams that already have 25 players versus our 20 would get an advantage. So if you're just looking on a per player basis, we're like 8th. Mm-hmm. Or so we're ahead of a couple of SEC teams that have more recruits than us.
Losing that offensive lineman must have hurt us a little bit.
Yeah, and so again, the big needs going into this class were number one offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. And we're taking care of that. We got 6 offensive linemen committed, 3 JUCO and 3 high school guys. So that was the big thing.
Yeah,
kind of the A number one. We needed depth. We need some depth at receiver. Because let's talk about we're going to do some off-season shows where we kind of after things settle down, the dust settles down on signing day. But let's talk about the receiver depth chart for 2 seconds for next year.
Well, we got good ones coming in, but remember during the Iron Bowl, Gus actually said we're running out of receivers.
Well, again, so who is a senior? Okay.
Well, Willie is gone.
Hastings was a receiver. We're a senior. Sal Canelo is a senior.
Salmonella's gone.
J.J. Wilson was a senior.
Oh, man. Just felt like he was just starting to get into things, and now he's gone.
Mm-hmm. So, you got Seth Williams, Schwartz, Stove.
Yep.
Okay. Beyond that, you got Matthew Hill.
Yeah.
Shedrick Jackson.
He's coming on. Shedrick.
I know, but that's really it. Marquise McClain transferred. Okay, so that's it at receiver. We redshirted a guy last year who's kind of a slot receiver guy, Javarius Johnson, I think is his name. He's a little guy, kind of a Ryan Davis type. So we'll add him and the signees, but we need some players at receiver, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Especially because you look at somebody, you look at Seth Williams and Schwartz. I mean, Seth Williams is going to be a junior next year. He could go to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So
Schwartz is injured a lot, it seems like.
Yeah, and he's thinking about, down the road, maybe just running track, or he could be a junior that, could decide to leave early too. So we need some receivers for the future and for the current time in terms of some backups and some other guys that could come in and play. So I think that we got 4 highly recruited receivers on this list, and I think those guys are going to, play a lot.
Like 4 stars, right? Something like that.
Yeah, that's right. So we got 4 star receivers in this class: Kobe Hudson, Xavion Capers, J.J. Evans, and Elijah Canyon. And I think all those guys are going to play. And here's the other thing: like Hudson is the shortest, and he's 6'1". Okay, Capers is 6'3", Evans is 6'2", and Canyon 6'3".
Man, that sounds good to me.
Yep, it's big. Yeah. I mean, that makes a difference. We need some big athletic receivers, and these guys these are guys that anybody in the country wanted.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that really, really matters.
We need it. Sounds good to me. Any other recruiting news?
Well, I mean, We say this every time. Don't tweet at recruits. We don't need to say that, but I'm going to say it anyhow.
You had a fine and, Dr. Seuss poem about that on Twitter.
Yes. we'll do kind of the position review because there's other guys that we redshirted that were backups before that we've kind of forgotten about that were big signees from a year ago.
Right.
So add those to these guys when we think about kind of where we are in spring practice or the depth chart and that kind of stuff.
We do kind of lose track of those guys. And it's interesting when they just suddenly pop up after you're like, oh, I forgot we had him. that's good.
That'll so there's. Fun. Yeah, those guys are out there, and I think they can make a difference. I think some of them could definitely play. So,
and the other concern, of course, we talked about yesterday is quarterbacks. We've gone from being in great shape to really needing to find a couple of quarterbacks for this class. And we've got one, I think we were saying, is a guy from Florida, dual threat, but he's not spectacularly rated. He's probably, to me, I get the sense he's along the lines of like a Malik Willis. I don't know. But we really need another good young quarterback in the system to provide some depth, don't we?
Yeah. No, we need another quarterback. Chael Garnett is the quarterback commit that we have.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, we like him. We recruited him a while ago. He's a dual threat guy, 6'1", 205. But we do need another quarterback just for depth purposes and maybe even, you know, a grad transfer or – something else like that, just because we need another guy on the roster in case something happens to, you know, something happens to Bo Nix next year in game two and he misses a game or two.
God forbid.
What are we going to do? Yeah. So I think we got to have some guys that can play.
Yeah. And I would think that recruits would know that and understand, you know, the receivers that were like, oh, I can go down there and catch balls from Bo Nix and Joey Gatewood. They might be a little turned off because there's no more Gatewood, but quarterbacks have got to say, hey, there's a prime opportunity waiting behind this kid that's probably going to play, you know, two, maybe three more years. I go in there in redshirt, and I'm going to have me a couple, two or three years of being the quarterback if everything works out well. So,
yeah.
So we'll see. The basketball shooty hoop team, I got to mention the fact that they are now still undefeated, and they are one of the final four. We're back in the final four, John. They are one of the final four undefeated. Well, we're back in the final four in terms of we're in one of the final four teams that hadn't lost a game yet. Knock on faux wood behind me. They defeated
St. Louis.
SLU, yes. My daughter's – older daughter's boy, Maddie's boyfriend goes to SLU, and he came over and watched as we pulled out another one of our 2019-2020 Auburn basketball. I don't know how it's going to be once we get in the regular season, but this entire pre-conference season has been typified by just, you know, they're not pretty yet. They may be gorgeous before the season's over, like last year. But they ain't pretty, but they do the dirty work, right? I mean, they're not zipping back and forth like Jared and Bryce last year and Chuma. They're not knocking down, you know, eight threes in a row or anything like that. If they get one three, I'm ecstatic. But what they're lacking so far, this is all conditional, you know, because it's just getting going. They don't really have a lot of chemistry yet. They're very individual right now. They're just kind of out-talenting the other teams. But what they lack in chemistry and smoothness, they're making up for pretty much in just brute force and sheer personal talent. You know, I mean, earlier on it was number 10 carrying the load for us. They've kind of Samir Dowdy. They've kind of clamped down on him a little bit, and of course, you know, we're still, you know, there's a long way to go before the pure raw talent of Isaac Okoro, you know, catches up to where it's going to be. But just, you know, those guys and the way Wiley is this year, he's a bigger, stronger guy, more, you know, he still turns the ball over and stuff, but he also does really well. It's just, you know, there's a bunch of things that have to get right. Javon McCormick's got to get a little better at back to where he was at the end of last season. He's kind of erratic still as the point guard. But I look at this team and I say, the reason they keep winning games is they're not remotely playing together as a smooth unit the way that they did last year, because this team is very different. It's some of the same players and some completely different players, and they're just not fitting together well. But for all that, they're undefeated and they've beaten some pretty darn good teams. And it's because, like I said, it's just they're finding a way to win and they're utilizing all that talent. You know, we talked about this before that, you know, they may only score 29 points and a half, but the other team has 19.
The defense has been excellent. They're really good on defense.
Getting they timely rebounds.
On defense. They rebound.
Yes.
Well, not great, but solid at rebounding. Yes. But they are really tough on defense. They make it hard for the other team. And they have enough guys that on offense that they don't have that kind of 3 or 4 minute cold snap thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the spurt ability that last year's team had, where they could, you know, rip off 15
points
like nothing. So,
yeah.
But they really did. Bruce Pearl and his staff did a good job designing the schedule because we played a bunch of very good teams. You know, we haven't played a Duke like we did last year or whatever. Some of the, you know, Gonzaga and those, some of those kind of teams, but we played very good teams. And so our strength of schedule rating is very high.
Yes.
And for the non-conference schedule piece, that's really good. That's going to help us at tournament time when they're looking to, at tiebreakers and stuff. And I think it's helped prepare our team well for that. So like in the computer rankings, like the RPI ranking and the, there was a net ranking that came out today. Like in the net ranking, we're 10th in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a, based on who you played and how well you're playing and that kind of stuff. So that's a long way to go. And that RPI, honestly, I think we're number one. but I'm not losing any sleep about that. But you know, there's some other good teams in the SEC and that kind of stuff. But I think this team is clearly on a playing at a level that they keep doing this. We work our way through the SEC. They're definitely going to be a tournament team again and make the NCAA tournament and make some stuff happen there. So,
yeah, what they've done so far is they tend to fall behind early and then dig in and hold it to where they never get that far behind, and then they just grind it out, and they grind it out. And next thing you know, you blink your eyes and they're ahead, and they never get really far ahead, but they're able to grind it out, take the lead, and hold the lead. That's like every game so far pretty much has matched something to do with that formula, you know, if they're behind for a while, they catch up, you don't score a lot of points on them, they don't create a ton of turnovers like last year's team was constantly doing, but they rebound fairly well, and they are opportunistic, and they grind and grind and grind, and next thing you know, they're ahead by 6, they're ahead by 8. They never get ahead by 12 or 15 or 20, but they just stay ahead of you by 6 or 8, 6 or 8. If they could make their dang free throws, they'd be up by 20. See, it's they do enough things to get ahead by 6 or 8, but they mess up enough things to never get further ahead than that. It's very frustrating. And yet they're undefeated. So what can I say?
That free throw thing is going to bite us in the rear end.
Yeah, that's it. Is that it's not that I'm complaining about it being undefeated. It's that we can see the potential they have, and it's frustrating when they do stuff that just holds them back from their own potential. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. So our next game coming up in just a couple of days. Let's see. On Thursday at 8 o'clock, we play NC State
in Auburn. Big revenge game.
Oh yeah, they beat us last year, and in Raleigh, and then 2 days after that we play Lehigh.
The Engineers.
Ooh, I did not know that.
They're from Pennsylvania. So.
Ooh, and then Lipscomb. So Lehigh and Lipscomb, attorneys at law. All right. Well, we do not have we didn't have a game this week, so we don't hear from Jared for a while. I'm going to ask Jared to do an occasional checking in on what's going on with the Eagle and his nemesis and all the and you know Pat and all that stuff. But I'm going to ask him to do that. I hope the writers' room over there they're bringing in some new riders over at the
Casa del Albrecht.
Yes, that's right. At the Long Box Crusade Network area, and we'll see what they come up with. Before we thank our patrons, the patrons got another benefit, or at least they got another opportunity, which is that we're doing the bowl pick'em contest. Tell us a little bit about that.
So yeah, we're doing the bowl pick'em contest for the patrons. I sent out the email Sunday. It's basically we're doing it on ESPN.com, and it's not you don't have to do confidence rankings or that kind of stuff. It's straight whoever picks the most wins.
Cool.
And so it's exciting. It's going to be fun. I went through it, and there's some tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've got it lined up. I'm going to get to it probably tomorrow. I get mine turned in. When do the bowls actually start? Do we know?
It's must be Friday, pretty Saturday.
Quick. Yeah, not too long from now.
We got John looking up stuff here.
John looking up stuff fan club. Oh, I forgot. Man, I'm glad you said that because I got to mention something else that I almost forgot. Man, with everything going on today. Mention? Well, John, I had a couple of free hours yesterday, and I thought you and I have talked and talked and talked about having some kind of T-shirts and what we would put on them, and I actually stumbled across a site that lets you do that, and I mean, there's several, but I'd never really been happy with them, and also I'd never quite figured out how to do the graphics right, but I sat down and spent a couple hours banging my head on it, and we now have T-shirts and hoodies available. For all of our listeners, anybody that is interested, all of our listeners, you can get AU Wishbone T-shirts or hoodies And I, you know, basically you go in and create your store and then put the things you want in there. And so I've put like several different versions of T-shirts. There's like women's T-shirts, standard T-shirts. There's a more deluxe, better quality T-shirt I put in there. And then there's two kinds of hoodies. There's a less expensive hoodie, and then there's more of like a deluxe, really nice hoodie in there. And they're all either navy blue or white. And I have different, there's like two different messages on the back, things on the back. All of them on the front has the AU Wishbone logo, and it says Auburn Football Podcast under AU Wishbone logo. But some of them are white, some of them are blue. And some of them on the back in orange and blue or orange and white, whichever looks better on the shirt. Some of them say Soundboard Fan Club, and some of them say, so you got that, Soundboard Fan Club shirts, if you want them. And some of them say Better at Celebrating. I figured that was the two slogans that would go to start out. I asked people on Twitter to give me some more ideas of what need to be on there, but nobody really suggested one yet. So if any of our listeners have a suggestion of something else that should be on the shirt, I will take it into account. But right now you got Soundboard Fan Club and Better at Celebrating. It's white and orange on a blue shirt, or it's white and blue on an orange and blue on a white shirt. Golly, sorry. And To get to that, I don't have the link in front of me, but it's at Teespring, TeeSpring, TeeSpring. I will put the link on the auwishbone.com site immediately after the show, okay? So it should be up tomorrow. You should be able tomorrow, meaning Tuesday, you should be able to go to www.auwishbone.com, and there should be a button or a link there that takes you to our T-shirt shop. But if it's not, if you're hearing this early somehow, then just go to Teespring and search for AU Wishbone. I would think it would come up as a storefront. But yeah, the shirts are there. They look really nice. I figured out how to print this the stuff where it just puts the logo. It doesn't put anything else. It looks really good. So I'm very excited about it, and I hope you will go check it out. And if you're a patron, which is, I'm going to segue into that segment real fast. If you are one of our patrons, look on the Patreon page. There's a special shirt just for you if you want it. Now, if you're a patron and you like Soundboard Fan Club, that's great. Go get that. If you're a patron and you like Better at Celebrating, that's great. Go get that. But if you're a patron and you want one that particularly points out that fact, if you might want that, then check on the Patreon page that you have access to as a patron at patreon.com/vanplexico or whatever. You know, go to our Patreon page. Click, you know, go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the Patreon link, and you'll see a special shirt and a special hoodie just for you. And also for the Patreons, I put it as just the deluxe editions, the really nice ones. I thought that would be a cool thing. And yeah, go check those out. I think you'll enjoy them. Speaking of the patrons, John, we have to thank the folks that keep our programs like this one on the air. For as little as $1 a month, you can take advantage of things like the bowl pick'em that John just sent out, our basketball brackets coming up soon, and our Formula One Fantasy League, and the SEC Power Poll. I mean, we just do stuff all year long to try to give you added value back. And one of the things you get back is that we mention your name on the air every episode. So let me thank our current awesome patrons that are keeping things going as we go into the off season. That, of course, is our big four at the top: Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. And then, of course, we have the great Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, AU Fan KSC, Wynn Carroll, Brian Gray, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then we have a couple of our newest patrons, Christopher Stewart and Clinton Stewart. Welcome aboard, gentlemen. We are awfully glad to have you guys. Then we have Mickey B., William Morgan, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up. And I got to give a shout out to AU Falling Up. He's been a loyal, devoted viewer of our live video shows on Sunday, and he cracks me up every time with the stuff he comments and puts on there. He had Burner Phone on there, and I was saying it was Lane Kiffin joining us. We have Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, and Jared Albrick. And by the way, again, I want to mention, thanks to you guys like Jared and AU Falling Up and the rest of you that do join us on the live video shows. It's awesome to have some live participation, and we really appreciate it, you guys. God, we had a bunch of people in the last couple of shows. Blake Heron, Steve Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Hugh Anderson. He joined us actually this afternoon for the TV series show. Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And then we're in the home stretch: Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, or Mahan. Dang it, Kevin, I'm going to quit screwing that up someday. Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wayne Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane. Man, we're very close to the end now. Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joseph Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brant Rumble, Surfer Chickify, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all so much. www.auwishbone.com. Join the fun. Join the family and join the fun. Let's see. Next week, we're talking about, John, maybe doing the Trial of Gus episode
2.0. And so if you have, you know, thoughts or feedback about the last time we did this, or, you know, what we should include this time, specifically one of the things that Van suggested that I thought was a really good idea is, what are the games during Gus's tenure where he lost to a team that was not as good as the Auburn team he was coaching? And so I think a lot of people point to that Tennessee game from, you know, 2018. So I think, what are those games? So let's identify those and then kind of, you know, weigh those in some with the other things that we're weighing in the Gus evaluation.
Yep, we will do that. So you thinking we'll do that next week?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
All right. Well, I haven't clicked any buttons yet, but I believe it is time.
I was going to say, there's a dramatic lack of soundboard.
There hasn't been a lot of occasions, but I will say.
Oh, my God!
Thank you.
Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
All right. And what do we got this week?
All right. First question says, the new t-shirts are great, but why the glaring omission of a What's Up with Pat and the Eagle t-shirt? Seems like money left on the table. He says, also, after all the work he's put in, you should probably get that yard sale guy a free Soundboard Fan Club t-shirt. I hear he'd like a 2X, maybe a 3X for a lounging weekend.
I was going to say, let me guess who that came from. Yeah, I do need I had to come up with some kind of a slogan for the Eagle and everything. Yeah. Team Eagle versus Team Pat.
I like it.
All right. What else we got?
This is from Brett Wiggins. He said, What are your thoughts on why we didn't use the 3-1-7 defense against Alabama when it was successful against LSU? Would it be because we respected their running game more? I would tell you no. It had more to do with, number one, probably Alabama had seen it prepared for. But the bigger thing is their passing game is just different.
Yeah.
LSU, as we talked about on the show, LSU throws the ball a lot more down the field. And Alabama throws it a lot more at the line of scrimmage. So it really is like a little bit of apples and oranges, that even though they throw the ball a lot and they have good receivers, the way they do it is different. And the defense that we used against LSU allowed us to put more guys back in pass coverage further away from the line of scrimmage and have more ability to deal with those receivers doing those things. So I think that's why. And again, part of it was Alabama's running game is really good. We didn't play that many defensive backs, and they still ran over.
Najee Harris. Well, let me ask you this, John, because this is a question that his question, which I thought was a really good one, but his question also, I think, raises another good question. If Kevin Steele got stuck in Groundhog Day, okay, and he woke up tomorrow and it's the Iron Bowl again, knowing what he knows now, what would he do differently? Is there some way that he could put another safety back? Clearly we needed somebody behind that receiver, Waddle.
Well, I mean, again, he scored on a kickoff return.
Yeah, but that's a special team. I'm talking about like him catching those passes and running through our secondary like they were standing, they nailed to the ground.
I mean, part of it is the schemes they do with the they have four great receivers.
Yeah.
And so part of it is they run things where the other receivers are, you know, we're playing man-to-man coverage and the other receivers are running away from the area that he's running to. So they're taking the coverage with them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so the problem is their four receivers are all so good that you can't double team Waddle or you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
You know, because those other guys are so good. If you put two guys on Waddle and not have the other guy, you know, back to help with anybody, you're creating problems. So it really is a situation where the answer is like just have more great cover guys. The one thing about the 3-1-7 I wanted to point out is if you watch the SEC championship game, Georgia tried to do it against LSU.
They did.
And failed miserably. Because they don't have Derrick Brown and Marvin Davidson.
And one of our DBs had a funny comment about that on Twitter. He said, "You need some straight goons to run what we run." I guess that's a compliment.
As soon as they tried it, you know, LSU barbecued them.
They really did.
LSU was probably ready for other teams to try to break that out like we did.
Yeah.
But Georgia thought they could work in that game.
I got something for you here. I got something for you real quick. So I hadn't thought about this until now, but it goes in with trying to name the Iron Bowl and all that. I want you to imagine this scenario just for fun. As great as the Iron Bowl was and as great as it came out and winning with that great offensive drive and the touchdown with Shivers and everything, I mean, that's great. That's great. But just imagine if we had been down 10 points in the fourth quarter. And imagine that our last two scores were those two pick sixes. It would be like the punt Bama punt 72 game, but with pick sixes. And it would make Saban look like Curly Hallman from the 94 LSU game.
I thought about that. Yeah, it's true.
Oh, man. And I mean, it could have happened because they were throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be like for Alabama to have thrown two pick sixes in the fourth quarter and give up a double-digit lead and lose 48-45?
That'd be so awesome.
Wow.
It'd be throw Bama throw then.
It would. Yeah. Because those two pick sixes then would be the biggest moments of the game rather than just two of the four or five biggest moments. So, yeah, that just came to me and I thought, wow. Okay. Any other listener questions?
Yes, a couple more. This is from Paulo Polo who says, is there a finer example of an Auburn man than Derrick Brown?
Mm.
And she included a link to the open letter to him. And she said, just want to make sure you guys saw it. Love the show, Paula. This is the one that Shea Booski wrote that's out there on their website now, which is really good. And no, Derrick Brown is a great person and a great representative for Auburn. And we're very fortunate to have got to experience him the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
All right. Our next question is from Auburn Elvis.
Yep.
All right. And he says, hi, guys. Longtime basketball expert here. He says, since Bruce Pearl has demonstrated that the secret to winning is getting more students who are good at basketball to enroll at Auburn, does that mean it really just was an admissions problem all along?
I guess it was. Yes. Hey, we were big basketball fans in our day, man. It just we didn't have a whole lot to cheer for.
And we had, you know, we had the, you know, the Chris Morris.
Yeah,
Jeff
we
Moore
did.
Team and Frank Ford.
Honestly, John, I mean, I was there in graduate school in the '90s after you had moved on, and so I really look back at my Auburn experience in basketball as being the Tommy Joe Eagles and Cliff Ellis, you know, period, which had some good moments.
Yeah, Chris Porter.
Yeah, that was after I was done. But yeah, I was there from, you know, I was there in graduate school in 93, 94, and then 96, 95, 96. And, yeah, that's right. And yeah, Tommy Joe, and we had some good wins there, beat Shaq's LSU team, a couple, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's true. We were there in the late 80s, and we did get to see the Chris Morris, Jeff Moore. Can't remember if was
Person. So we had a team again. The Chuck Person was gone, and Wesley Person wasn't there yet. But we had a team that again that was 88. I want to say they had Chris Morris, Jeff Moore, Mike Jones on it.
Oh yeah,
and when all three of those guys were healthy and at full strength, I really felt like that was a team that could do some damage. And I remember we played Georgia Tech in Atlanta like at Christmas time that year. We went to see the game. And this was the Georgia Tech team that went to the Final Four that had Kenny Anderson, Dennis Scott, Brian Allen on it.
Yeah.
And right before that game happened, Mike Jones got declared academically ineligible, and Jeff Moore, I think, broke his hand.
I think he did, yeah, break his hand.
And so it really was like Chris Morris playing one against five most of that game. And I think we took him in on the wire, but we lost. That was a
– Yeah.
But
I remember that. He may have broken his hand in that game, in fact.
I think he did. I think he broke it on the rim.
On the rim, yeah. That reminds
me. I think I remember this because he broke his hand on the rim and they did not call a foul. Yeah. The guy hit him into the rim. And,
yeah. So. Those were teams that went to the second round, and they drew an easy team in the first round and won. In the second round, they drew like Indiana the year they won. They drew Oklahoma the year they got second.
Oklahoma that had Mookie Blaylock and
Stacey King. Yeah. Oh man, those were some good times. And then I would go to the high school tournament going on in the state in the Coliseum and see a young Wesley Person playing. For example, I saw a young what's his name, Horace whatever for Alabama. Saw him play, and so yeah, Robert Horry. Yeah, I saw Robert Horry playing in Auburn in the high school tournament. So yeah, good times, man. All right.
Last question from Justin Counts, who says, does Chad Morris provide more of a boost in recruiting or offensive philosophy? It's a good question. He has good recruiting connections. And again, he was an SEC head coach. Part of that is you got to be a good recruiter. And he learned some stuff at Clemson about that, I'm sure. But I mean, I think it's probably, like I said, a quarterback evaluation and quarterback recruiting and development. And I think, you know, he can contribute to the offensive philosophy in ways that the other guys couldn't, where they can, I think Gus would be willing to blend in some of his ideas.
You got to think that the Knicks family is happy about this, right?
No. Yeah. Yes.
They got to be thrilled.
Again, think about it this way. Okay. Forget that Gus is the head coach. If Tuberville was the head coach, like it was 10 years earlier or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we hired a Chad Morris type as the offensive coordinator, people would be ecstatic.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. To use your Ferrari example earlier, I mean, it's almost like, you know, Bo signed on with McLaren just because of his loyalty. And then they're bringing in the Mercedes or Ferrari mechanics. You're like, well, I'm not necessarily with the greatest program here, but we're now got the best, you know, possible people behind the scenes working on it. So should be very good. I'm excited. Should we be ready to take it around the SEC?
Yep.
Let's take it around the world.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Blame yourself. Without
Will.
So we got games. We got the SEC, I'm assuming here, bowl games. It looks like the first you got here is the Texas Bowl with Texas A&M versus Texas Oklahoma State. Aren't they on honorary Texas?
To answer your question earlier, bowl games begin Friday, the 20th.
Holy cow!
Yeah, that's good. That's 4 days.
Yeah, not SEC bowl games, but just bowl games, period.
Just bowl.
Holy cow!
Just bowl games, yes. All right.
It's good. I enjoy bowl season.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be football and football and football and football and football and beer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Not bad.
Yes. Yes. I didn't sing that like I usually do to drive my kids crazy, but yes. We got the Texas Bowl with Texas A&M versus Texas Oklahoma State in Texas. We got the Music City Bowl up here in my direction in Nashville, Mississippi State, Louisville. Woo, I bet they're excited for that matchup. Mississippi State and Louisville. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
And I say you.
Yeah, no, it's more like.
Please clap.
That's what the Music City Bowl. Some years you get Auburn, Purdue. Some years you get, whatever. You're getting Mississippi State, Louisville. So
I'm sure the Louisville fans are pretty excited because they hired a good coach and bounced back from the Petrino.
Who did Louisville hire?
They crawled out. They hired Scott Satterfield, who is the Appalachian State head coach.
There you go.
The past few years.
Sometimes it doesn't work out, but oftentimes it does. All right. The Orange Bowl, the Usurper Bowl, the bowl that has stolen national championships from us in the past. I don't have fond feelings for the Orange Bowl. Florida, Virginia. This is just some weird matchups this year. There's just some weird matchups. It's like you're like the Orange Bowl, Florida, and you're like, oh, yeah, who? Virginia. Virginia. Okay. You've seen them get blown out by Clemson. Now watch them play Florida. Ooh, we should call this I don't know if it's the FedEx Orange Bowl or the NutraSweet Orange Bowl, but I think we should dub it the Foregone Conclusion Orange Bowl.
Yeah, it's not good there.
Preordained Outcome Orange Bowl. We got the Belk Bowl, which is one of those. The Belk Bowl is one of those bowls. It's like a three-legged, one-eyed dog. It's just not the most sexiest thing ever, but you still kind of love it,
It's always entertaining,
though. It is, yeah. It's the Belk Bowl. You get football and you get ads for mid-level to discount level clothing. Kentucky, Virginia Tech. That in most years, Kentucky, Virginia Tech, I would be like, huh? But this could be an interesting game because Virginia Tech was so bad and then they got pretty good. And Kentucky's just been kind of smoking mirrors because of, things they couldn't help outside their control. So what do you think?
No, I mean, Kentucky's, running their wide receiver quarterback offense and they actually got really good at it down the stretch. So
that's amazing.
Virginia Tech was terrible, but they were unhappy with their coach about four games into the season, and then they turned it on and finished pretty, had a pretty good stretch run. So I think it's going to be a pretty even matchup and entertaining game.
I can see Stoops coming out next spring or next fall and going, we decided we're just going to stick with the receiver offense. It worked for us. We have quarterbacks now, but we're just going to stick with the receiver player.
They're one of their future quarterbacks is.
I do. Yeah. Not probably. Well, how is there any way he would get to play next year? Talking about Joy Gatewood.
Some weird
Justin
exemption
Fields
thing. I don't think it's going to happen.
The Justin Fields rule, which is please. Yeah. I don't know. Now, Citrus Bowl, this is the one that the Orlando boosters wanted so badly because it's the sexiest matchup you're going to get in the SEC other than the playoffs, and that is Alabama-Michigan. It's not even the two programs because this year Michigan's very mediocre, and Alabama got 40-something points rung up on them twice in division play. So this isn't the great Alabama or great Michigan teams of the past, but – but you got these two coaches that think they are God's gift to football that are going to be knocking heads. So that could be fun.
I think Bama's going to annihilate them.
Yeah. Well, but the off-the-field stuff is going to be more entertaining.
Yes.
In the Consolation Sugar Bowl, which, again, I need to go through and come up with, sponsors for all these bowls. It's the Texas Bowl with Texas A&M versus Texas Oklahoma State. For this one, it is the Consolation Sugar Bowl. There needs to be like a car called the Dodge Consolation. So it could be the Dodge Consolation Sugar Bowl. And it's Georgia versus Baylor. You know, the Sugar Bowl has become what the Outback Bowl used to be, which is where the loser of the SEC championship game goes. You remember there was this, some of you may not know, there was this thing early on where the team that lost the SEC championship game would have like three losses, and they'd fall all the way down to like the Music City Bowl or the Weed Eater Bowl, and they were pointing out, you know, if we hadn't, you know, it's usually Florida that would beat them, whoever it was, Arkansas or whoever, you know. And they were like, you know, if we hadn't, or Mississippi State, they were like, if we hadn't gone to the SEC championship game, we'd have only two losses and we wouldn't be in the Weed Eater Bowl. And so the SEC stepped in and said, that's a fair point. You shouldn't get penalized in your bowl game for losing the SEC championship game. And so they said, you can't fall below the Outback Bowl. And now you can't really fall below the Sugar Bowl if you lose, apparently. Just like us in 17, here's Georgia in 19 going to the Consolation Sugar Bowl against Baylor. So, and then finally, the Gator Bowl, which is a weird name for a bowl game, I've always thought. Tennessee, Indiana. Anything of note there?
Again, Indiana's not bad, and Tennessee's kind of on the upswing. Again, this could be a solid game.
I think it's one of those that doesn't look cool up front, but when you kind of dig around a little bit, you can find some value there.
Yeah, and again, Indiana's trying to get to 9 wins. Tennessee trying to, you know, finish on a positive note and build heading into next year. So I think both teams are going to be pretty motivated.
All right. Well, that's what we've got. I guess we'll do our big Outback Bowl preview sometime either right before or right after Christmas, you think?
Yep.
We'll talk about it a little bit more. There's not a whole lot. I want to go watch some game film of Minnesota and see what they're all about, because I watched a little bit of the Penn State game, and that's all I've seen of them. All I know about Minnesota, John, besides that they're the Gophers, all I know about them is that their uniforms are not what you'd call aesthetically pleasing.
The other thing you need to know is that they say Skyy Ma.
That may cause us to be an explicit rated podcast, because I have no idea what you
cheers. That's one of their cheers, Skyy Ma. Mm. And they say a lot of row the boat.
Row the boat. Gently down the stream. Winning the bowl game is nothing but a dream. All right. Well, next episode, we got to talk about music. But we'll burn that bridge when we come to it. I think it's time to bring things to a close for tonight. So our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle. So what becomes of you, my love? When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.